You're right. No better word to talk about than love to see Jan and Jay here with us and everybody with us. So this morning, my assignment, my lesson is going to be on based on 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And as most of you know, this is referred to basically as the chapter of love. And I appreciate Jason's lead into this because he could have gone a lot of different ways with it. And I appreciate the handout about the gifts and everything. So it was a good lead-in for me. So with it only being 13 verses, I'm going to go ahead and read it to you because I think it's worth hearing, and you can follow along or you can, you know, listen. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels but have not love, I have become sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Love never fails, but whether there are prophecies, they will fail. Whether there are tongues, they will cease. Whether there is knowledge, it will vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect has come, then that which is in part will be done away. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know just as also am known. And now abide faith, hope, love, these three, but the greatest of these three is love. And just to share with you an example, I got to experience a big part of love. Karen and I did in our family when we had our grandson, which came into this world on Wednesday. And, you know, there's nothing like holding a new baby. And you look at it and you just, I'm so amazed of just like, how did this happen? How did he come out like this? So we got to experience in that. Well, that was a big thrill for our family. So this morning, as kind of an introduction, I want to talk about I want you to consider three things. I'm going to look at what are some of the Greek words or meanings of love, because there are several. And then why was Paul writing this letter to the church at Corinth? And then probably Jason can answer this, and that's who I'll probably talk to at the very end. And is love a gift? You know, is it a gift? So those are three things that I really want to kind of touch on this morning. And as we go along, if you got questions, please feel free to ask. So what are some of the Greek words meaning of love? And what language do you think Paul was writing this letter to the church of Corinth? What language was he using?
Greek language.
Okay. So could we say the Greek language is probably a richer language? Especially when you're talking about love, could we say that? Sure, we could. So let's look at eros, is another Greek word for love, which refers to what today we would call romantic love, that is a response to beauty or goodness to be beloved. And then there's philia, from which we get our word philanthropy. In Greek, its meaning is close to what we would call today friendship. And then there's storge, which carries the sense of love of the familiar, the love we have for family members or people we've known all our lives. But I think Paul used the word agape. I think he used this word when he was writing that letter to the Corinthians. And it's all about, isn't it, is based on affection or approval. It's totally unconditional, coming as a free gift, not because the beloved deserved it. It's a decision of the will to act in the other person's best interest, whether we like it or not. It's getting down at the supper table and washing your disciples' feet. It's being willing to lay down your life to save people who don't even care about you. It's the way God loves us and the way God called us to act toward others as well. So I think this was the Greek word probably Paul was using, and it is referenced in other Bibles about how agape is, it's unconditional. It truly is love. So, question. Why was Paul writing this letter to the church at Corinth? Everything going good, everything's great. Paul.
I think there were a lot of divisions in the church. There were problems. He said you have one member lawsuits against another member. You have all these different problems. Even in the beginning of Corinthians, you said you have some people saying, I follow Paul and I follow Apollos. He's trying to say that's not what you should be doing. And he said, no matter if you have spiritual gifts, no matter all the things you have, it's just noise unless you have love.
Right. So what were some of the things they were doing that Paul was trying to address? Were they speaking in tongues?
This is kind of in between chapter 12, which says spiritual gifts, and chapter 14, which says spiritual
gifts.
Right. So that's kind of where I put it at.
Right, yeah. So Paul had a suspicion that sometimes there wasn't a lot of love in the way they use these gifts. And think about it. Paul maybe had visited Corinth twice, I believe, and maybe he's writing this letter. Where was he at? I don't remember where he was when he wrote this letter. Anybody remember? Not sure.
Ephesus, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's where he was. So he's writing a letter, okay? And think about that means of communication, and who was he sending it to? Probably the leaders of the church, and compared to what we could do today. If there was a problem at a church, or you know, even Tad, can you know, how does Tad communicate with his churches that he works with, or you know, what means does he have? So he writes this letter, and he's sending it to them, and then you know, it's like, hey, hope it gets done, because of the follow-through is the big part of it. So let's take a quick look at the verses. You know, I'm going to divide this up into three parts, and I will read the verses over again just to kind of give you a reference. So in verses 1 through 3, Paul teaches us that love is essential to the life of the church. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I have become a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, so that I could remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. So is Paul writing this in reference to himself? You know, he says, I have become sounding brass, I speak with the tongues of men, I have the gift of prophecy.
Is he sounds like he's sort of speaking for everybody.
Right. But this is what he has. Would you say that? Sure. So let's look at, what is Paul reminding the church at Corinth? What's he telling them?
Well, we can say all kinds of things, but our actions speak louder than words sometimes. And he's saying, if I do all these things, and I have a lot of good characteristics and qualities, but I don't have love for you, it doesn't matter. It's just this noise in the background.
Right.
So he's trying to use himself as an example. Okay. Say, I've got this and this. If I do this, you're no different. Then we don't love each other. And
right, because after I read this over and over, it's like, okay, is he writing this about himself, or is he reminding them this is how it should be? Okay.
I already mentioned Jason's handout, but just reading over these three verses, how many things in these three verses were on their handout? So the tongues, verse 2, prophecy, knowledge, faith, giving. And so it is such a continuation of what he started last week, and you know, to go along with what Clayton said, he just got done talking about all these gifts, and now he's saying, great if you have them, but you know, to add it on, there's one more thing you need.
Yeah, Malachi.
The word love here is, of course, agape. It's a love of action, it's the way that God loves. And Paul mentions here the way that he speaks. He mentions doing good deeds for others. Yet it all hinges on that agape. Without Christ, without the love that we have for Christ, without Him driving us, everything that we do will amount to nothing. We'll never achieve agape love without Christ. Christ.
Right.
What we'll do will have no effect.
Okay, Jason.
Yeah, one of the things I love, along with what Malachi was just saying, along with what Malachi was just saying, is I did a series, like a sermon series on this a long time ago, and one of the things I love about the language that Paul uses is there's two words that he uses specifically, and that's agape and agapao. And what's awesome about that is that agape is what love is. So it means to put on love like clothing. And then agapao is what love does. So when people say that, you know, love is just an emotion, we have biblical scriptural references right here that tells us, no, it's not. Love is an emotion. It's something that we put on. It's something that we have to become. We have to become love, just like God is love. But we also have to do something to show love.
Right. I mean, you can talk about it all you want. I could say I love everybody in here. But, you know, how do I show that? And how do I show how much I appreciate everybody? So Paul's reminding them, you know, like, you know, what is your culture like? You know, is it about getting, caring for others, or is it all about you? You know, what comes first, you or the church? So I think those are things that I think need to be mentioned. And he says all these things that he mentions are worth absolutely nothing if it's not about love. So what was Paul telling the church, still referencing verses 1 through 3, telling the church at Corinth about personal sacrifice? What was he telling them? You know, if they gave away all their possessions, and without love, without love, you gain nothing, right? So, and here's just something I threw out, you know, referencing us. What would Paul write a letter to us here at Riverside Road Church of Christ if he was writing a letter about, okay, I'm going to write about love, and here's what I'm telling you at Riverside Road Church of Christ? What would he say? I mean, just throw out a couple things. Because I thought about writing a letter, you know, and I got started on it. I thought, man, I could spend the whole half hour on this.
I'd use the word continue in love.
Yeah. You work at it, you know, because I think there's highs and there's lows in everything we do. I mean, I think the highs that we show for each other, especially when we're in need, you know. I know Jan and Jay have gone through some rough stretch here, but, you know, I hope they've felt the church love from us. And, you know, I think, you know, any time that I'm down or any time that I'm not well, I feel it. You know, I think, hey, people are asking me, you know, I'm getting texts from Dwayne or, you know, Clayton or everybody, you know, hey, how you doing? Stay strong. And that's encouraging. And I think love is encouraging, you know, it's not thinking about yourself, but thinking about others. So I think, you know, we are, you know, I'm not going to say we're the best loving church there is. I'm not going to say that. But I think this church that I go to is. So I think that's something that we need to remember. I think, you know, I like hugging people, and I know there was a time when we couldn't do that. You know, so that was a tough stretch for us when that year 2020 came, and it was like everything went aside. And now it's almost like, hey, we got to build up, and I think we're there. So anyway, any other comments on that to end the verses of 1 through 3?
I think.
Dwayne, just meant 10.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about this agape love, there's only one source to it, and that is God and Christ, the
right.
Godhead. We have to put them on. We have to get them in our heart, and that's the only way we're going to be able to really do all these things, love like God loves. Will we ever get to that point that we love completely like God does, where God so loved the world? No. We won't get all the way there. But the more we have of Christ and God in our hearts, the more of that love we'll have.
Right. Ted?
One of the themes through 1 Corinthians, one of their problems really is how competitive they became with each other. And the little divisions that were created, and they were competitive in regards to gifts. And I think chapter 13 is the solution. When you really love each other, you're not competitive with each other anymore.
Right, because I think Paul identified the problem. I think he said, hey, I don't see the love that I should be seeing at this church. So as any leader like Paul is, he took action. And okay, here's a plan to fix it. And I think that after looking at this letter, you know, I use a lot of my background and what I did. Say, hey, you identify the problem, you come up with a plan to fix it and you address it. And I think Paul identified that. And I think, how could he let it go? Especially the time that he had spent down, you know, establishing the church, trying to get people on the right track, and trying to do different things with them. So I appreciate that of Paul, that he took the leadership role and said, hey, here's what I'm going to do, and he did it. So let's look at verses 4 through 6. And to me, after reading these verses, I mean, Paul lays it out. This is the meat of a letter. This is the meat of, hey, here's my expectation. And he tells them, hey, there's 11 parts to this. And, you know, I think he's really pinpointed. I mean, he's pointed on it. He's calling them out on it. And he's telling them what it is. So he describes to us included, and the church at Corinth, exactly what love is and what it does. So starting with verse 4 through 6. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. Is not puffed up. Does not behave rudely. Does not seek its own. Is not provoked. Thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. And Paul tells us that what this love is and what it's all about. And I said there's 11 parts. So the 11 parts is that love is kind. Okay? Love, you are not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. Love, do not insist on getting your own way. You don't rejoice. Love is you don't rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoice in the truth. When they see people doing wrong and hurting others, what do? Just don't stand by and let it happen. And those who love are not irritable or resentful. And those who love bear all things, believe all things, hope all things, and endure all things. 11 parts. So, here's a question. So, being a dedicated, loving person, pretty easy, isn't it? No, not very easy. So, Karen and I were talking about this, and I was saying, you know, to me, this is where he gets it. He nails it. And she said, she read somewhere, where you replace the word love with your name. So, when I read this, the first time going through it, the second time, it's like it made me really feel uneasy. Because it's like I fall short a lot of times, probably majority of the time, on all this stuff. Of what, you know, is Mark kind? Is Mark loving? Is Mark, you know, envious or boastful? Well, sometimes. Mark, do I insist on getting my own way? You know, do I rejoice in wrongdoing? With the Cardinals, yes, I do. I'm sorry.
Are you patient?
Yeah. And am I patient? No, I'm not. And, you know, am I, you know, Mark is not irritable or resentful. You know? I bear all things, I believe all things, and I hope things, and I endure all things. So it's almost like, hey, I fall very short. But this is good for me to go back and read time and time again because, you know, I read somewhere where they read it at weddings, you know, but they also read it at funerals. And so I think it's really right on as to what Paul's trying to communicate. And I think it's a chance for us to self-reflect and to, okay, what is love to me all about? And, you know, Paul.
I used to have a problem with this just because I didn't feel that I was as emotional loving as I should be. And after studying, like you read in the definition, love is a committed decision that you act in the other person's best interest. And that helped me a lot because when I don't always feel like, you know, as emotional yeah. loving as I might be, I can be as committed and loving.
Right. And I'll be honest, I mean, when it comes to our family, we have a big family, just our side, there's 23 of us. So we're pulled a lot of different ways, and I'll be honest, I'm not like, hey, I got things to do. I don't have time to watch them. You know, I want to do this. And, you know, like, we went up Tuesday, stayed till Friday, and that was hard. I mean, Karen knew I was about ready to go. And it was like, was I patient? Not very. So I had to go out and start cleaning stuff because, you know, all we're doing is sitting around. And the granddaughter really doesn't like men. So she really liked out, I mean, Drew and Nora, but Coach Paul, not so much. So it was kind of like, why am I here? You know, so anyway, that was a rough stretch for me, but then again, I kept saying, hey, I'm giving a talk on love. At least I could show a little bit, you know. So, and I'll be honest, you get pulled a lot of different ways. And, you know, but Karen's more of those things than I am when it comes to it. But she reminds me, hey, look, we don't ever get to see them. They're busy. So, and it's tough because I think that's something that they need to see from me and our family, Karen. It's like, hey, we love them. And there's things we have to do. So that was trying, but hey, I made it through. All right. Any other questions on verses 4 through 6?
You know, in Galatians chapter 5, verse 26 says, let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. It goes right along with this. You know, Tad said, what was going on in that time? They had become competitive. They had a lot of things that was going on. Yeah. And it's easy to provoke or push buttons or to not love.
Yeah.
And that's a great reminder for us to not be conceited, not poke buttons, not do those things. It's just in us, but yeah. it needs not be.
Well, they didn't have the Bible either, did they?
No.
They didn't have the New Testament. You know, Karen pointed that out to me. I go, you're right. So I think there's, you know, hey, that's our, what do you call it, curriculum. I mean, that's what we teach, that's what we know, that's what we try to, you know, imitate and do. So, any other comments?
I think sometimes we think, you know, fruit of the Spirit, love is first level lust. Oh, love, you know, we've got that down. I love you, you love me, we all love each other. But when you break it down into these parts, then I think it takes us to,
yeah.
Not that this is about marriage. I know we've already said, you know, we read a lot of weddings, whatever. It's really about church. But this podcast said marriage will teach you how selfish you are. And parenting will teach you how angry you are.
Yeah.
And I guess I think about a lot of these things. If I were to sum up these verses, it would be more selfless.
Right. And parenting, that's pretty easy to show love all the time, isn't it? Especially when they do something they shouldn't do or something. And it's a challenge. There's no doubt about it. But I think God gives us the Bible and gives us this chapter to kind of look at. And Paul writes it to us, you know, of all people. Paul writing about love. Who showed him love? You know, after all the stuff he did. You know, God did. So, you know, it's like, hey, I've been, you know, given a lot of things, and now it's my time to show appreciation for that. So,
but God did show us that there was righteous indignation, righteous not liking something.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you love them, yes, the love still goes on, but you have to get upset with them. And he had wrath.
Yeah. You know, yeah, I tell the girls all the time, someday you'll thank me. You know, you may not like it right now, but someday you'll thank me. And I push them. You know, I pushed our older four, I pushed them. And it was just kind of like, I know what you're capable of doing. And if I backed off on that, that's not my role. And I know Karen thinks I'm kind of hard on them, but it's like, hey, look, I know. Travis knows, and all of us, that, you know, we all know what kind of kids are and what kind they can be. And it's like, you're not going to be like that. You know, I'm going to make sure that happens because I love you. And that's how you need to, that's the last thing you need to do. You know, when I used to coach, I used to say, fellas, in our coaches meeting before practice, I said, I'm going to chew on them today and I'm going to be hard on them. And I want every one of you to come back behind me patting them on the back. And, you know, and kids need to hear that. You know, kids need to know when it's wrong and not always the nicest way. And I get that. But, you know, I saw some things on TV with the College World Series, and I go, oh, this coach comes out, you know, in between pitches, this Ole Miss coach, and he is ripping them right on the mound. And he, not a word said. They just turn off, go. And I thought, you know, we miss that sometimes. You know, oh, let's be nice. Let's don't hurt their feelings. Well, guess what? You know, sometimes they need to have their feelings hurt to see the truth and how much we do love them. Because you don't hold back. And I'm saying that's not the best way to do it. But I think I know, you know, Karen and I know that, hey, sometimes it's, hey, you got to push them and make them get out of their comfort zone. So, anyway, all right. And finally, in verses 7 through 13, Paul tells us that love is the only thing that will last forever. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. But whether there are prophecies, they will fail. Whether there are tongues, they will cease. Whether there is knowledge, it will vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when that which is affected, or that which is perfect, has come, then that which is in part will be done. Done away. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see in a mirror, dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I know I shall know, just as I also am known. And now abide faith, hope, love, these three, but the greatest of these is love. So, what's going to last? Paul is asking the church at Corinth, hey, what's going to last? What's going to stay with you? What's he looking for there? Yeah, true love, and all these things that they've been doing and boasting about and practicing, guess what? That's all going to go away. You know, the tongues, the prophecy, the knowledge, everything. It's going to be gone. But love will always be there. And then on that day when we see God face to face, what will really be important for us? Not only love, but the truth. You know, what have we done for others? What are we doing for others? And verse 10, here's a question. But when that which is perfect has come, then that which is in part will be done away. What's he talking about there? That which is perfect will come, then that which is in part will be done away with. What's he talking about?
That's a hard verse.
That's why I'm asking that question, Wayne.
I've always had the thought that it was when the Bible was completed, when we had the perfect law of liberty. But I'm beginning to kind of change to the other way of looking at it, and that's the judgment day. That's when we are transformed into our spiritual being to go to heaven with God. So.
Okay. Any other comments? Malachi, then Maverick.
So I've been studying this chapter a lot recently, and it is an interesting topic, but sometimes by getting into the nitty-gritty of whether it's judgment day or whether it's, he's talking about Jesus, which I think is clearly wrong, or he's talking about the coming of the New Testament, we lose the overall context of the chapter. I think you just nailed it. Paul's saying to them, focus on building up what's going to be in heaven, what's going to last forever. Build up that. So the context of it is, don't be caught up in the temporal things, but focus on the eternal. And I do think, personally, that he's speaking of the end of times in heaven, when that is which is perfect has come. But the context, what's really important, is as you said, focus on what's eternal and not what's temporal.
Okay, Maverick?
Kind of going along with that, what I've kind of thought about is, we know that we're told the tabernacle and temple and stuff were a shadow of what is in heaven. It is not the full glory of it. Well, just in that sense, really the church at the moment is just a shadow of what it will be in the end. We don't have complete love. We are not as perfect as we hopefully will be at the end times. We still fight and have arguments amongst us. But we know from what we're told looking forward, we won't have that in heaven. We will all be singing his praises and be together. We will know no night, no sorrow, or pain. So I kind of agree that we need to be working on this, especially love, but we only know part of it. We don't fully understand, and we won't until the end of times comes and we see Christ and God.
Well, the thing that Karen and I talked about on this is, but when that which is perfect has come, what can you say right there? And I know Malachi said, no, didn't you say it's not about Jesus? I mean, when I think of something that's perfect, I'm thinking, hey, that's Jesus. Or will come, or has come.
So, yes, I think if we're thinking that it's the end of times, and that which is perfect being Jesus, he will come. Yes, some people take the context of the passage to mean he's describing Jesus throughout this. But
right. In
that context, that's clearly incorrect. And him coming in the end of time, totally possible.
Right.
What I meant is this passage describing Jesus.
Right.
That doesn't make sense.
Right. Good point. But you know, that's what I think about. I think, okay, he's coming, he will come, he has come. And he's going to come again. That's what I think about.
He's talking about that last verse. When you get to there, then that's kind of changing my mind, because there's only three things that will survive, and that is faith, hope, and charity.
Right.
Now, the faith, you would think faith is believing in something that we can't see, but when we go to heaven, we're going to see it. So faith is not as important. And hope has been fulfilled. But love, that's why it says, is the greatest.
Right.
Love is what's going to be, and that's the divine love of God.
Right. And if you even think of the word love, I mean, that tells us, you know, what better word to represent all those feelings and all the tasks that, you know, we're asked to do in love. So, and I agree with you, the faith, hope, and love, and the greatest being is love. So, So, Jason, is love a gift? Okay. So, what do you mean by that? Tell me. How can we gift love to somebody?
Well, one thing that is very interesting to me about this whole, I think Paul kind of nailed it on the head, but one thing that's interesting to me about this whole thing is that I believe if we go all the way back to chapter 11, the last thing that's said in chapter 11 is desire earnestly the best gifts. And then we have a whole chapter about gifts and about how those gifts are diversified amongst the differing parts of the body. And so then we start talking about how all of these gifts, you know, some of these things will pass away. But the greatest of all of these is love. And so, really, in my opinion, it's not just a gift. It's what every other gift needs to be tempered with.
Okay.
I guess if we were to use a very scriptural metaphor, Paul has frequently used the idea of tempering metal. And sorry, but I like to watch Forged in Fire a lot, so I'm going to indulge a little bit. But whenever I hear them talking about, you know, the way that they quench their blades and stuff like that, they always have to do it in a very specific way. They can't get it too hot, they can't get it too cold, otherwise their blade's going to shatter on the ice block. So when I read this, that's kind of the impression I come away with, is that love has to be that tempering oil that makes all of these other gifts actually last the test of time.
Right, because it's not like we've never had it, okay? So it's not like you can't give it. But I think it's always there, and I don't think anybody can give it to you. I think it's something that you have to recognize on your own what it is. And I know I reference this as chapter 13. You say Paul's telling them you don't have it, but here's what I'm telling you it is. And if you practice what I'm telling you in those verses 4-6, then it's like you can get it. It's a gift. I'm going to give it to you as a gift. An everlasting gift. And then, you know, God gave his only son as you know, an act of, a gift of love for us. So, anyway, and I mentioned, you know, about Paul. I mean, he experienced love. You know, the life that he led, and, you know, God loved him so much that guess what? Look what he turned him into. Somebody that's really a big part, plays a big part in this Bible. And especially in the New Testament, is him. And of course, God's ultimate gift of love, John 3:16. You know, we all know that verse, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life with him. So, running short of time, you know, I had another question of, hey, what other examples of love are there in the Bible? And, you know, I'll share with you three things that, you know, I've led a very interesting life. Karen laughed at that when I told her that. I said, but there's three things I've learned, you know, and that's a whole other story how I could get into that, how it happened, because, you know, we all have our stories to tell, and I have a pretty unique one at times. But, you know, there's three things that I believe in. Hey, you don't take things for granted. Life is going to change. And there's some things that you can control in your life, and there's some things you can't. But you better know what you can control. And you better know when you're around something that you can't. So things will change. You know, did I think I was going to have a big traumatic event in my life at 17? No. No. Nobody prepared me for that. So, and the second thing, you know, I had to learn to forgive. You know, some people done some things, and hey, guess what? I could have been mad at them forever. I used to tell my staff all the time, I go, I could walk around here, this school mad at half of you because everything you do, you know, but I had to learn to forget. And I had to learn to become a people person. And then I think that's what you become when you learn to forget. You know, you're not rude, you know, all those things that Paul said. And then finally, you got to love like there's no tomorrow. Because we're not guaranteed tomorrow. And that's one of those things that, hey, remind yourself of that. Said, hey, guess what? Love is here, and I need to practice it today. Not tomorrow, but today. Any questions?
I think that list of items that he gave there, what was it, 3 through 7 or whatever, you know, this is no different than anything else, like a characteristic or character, part of our character. We can all work on it, like you've said. We all have work we must do, and he gives us these things so that we can reference those and think. You read it earlier, you know, am I?
Yeah.
We have to, you know, it talks about that mirror. They didn't really have a mirror then. Maybe they looked into metal. I don't know exactly. But, for us, we have to really think about, am I these things? And if not, it's just like anything else. We got to work on it.
Yeah. And the farther we get away from them, the harder it is to get back. But the biggest thing that we can do is be an example to others. You know, like, hey, I'm all about love, and I told you what my shortcomings are, but I try to practice those as much as I can. Appreciate your comments. Thank you.